Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and I guess I'm going to welcome myself back. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on the air here. I took a little vacation, went to Miami with my girlfriend, Carol, and actually was back last week, and we were supposed to have the show last Thursday, and unfortunately I had to cancel it out. In fact, I didn't even schedule it to come on live on the air. Unfortunately, my guest had another engagement that they had sort of got things mixed up and had to cancel out, so just decided not to to have the show, and I was still kind of in vacation mode, so it worked out well anyways, but he'll be joining me tonight, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But we're going to you've noticed, I'm sure, the last few weeks that I've been on the air that I've been not having the Coach's Corner segments on here, just giving some of the participants a little bit of a rest. They're all busy, of course, doing a lot of different things, and it's difficult sometimes to schedule them in. And I'm getting, as I've mentioned, probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, I guess, mentioned about a new program that I'm going to have as part of the Coach's Corner, new series, actually, I guess is a better way to put it. And that's going to be coming up. I'm actually going to start that in September, the first show in September, which I'm not sure what the date is, but it's around the 5th or 6th, I believe, or actually I think it's the 4th, if I'm not mistaken, right after Labor Day weekend. But anyways, that's going to be called Plan for Success. And just some of the things that are on there, we'll be talking about, of course, fitness and how to get prepared physically for golf. And also what to put in your mouth from a nutritional standpoint. We're going to talk about nutrition and how to, not just for golf, but just in general. But I'm going to have some people on here that sort of specialize in that as well, and help some of you guys and gals out there that maybe want to eat a little bit better and give you some more energy while you're out walking around, or even if you're in a cart, a little more energy for your round and not all hopped up on sugar and so forth. So we're going to talk about some nutrition and as well as the fitness part of it. Also, we're going to talk about the equipment end, not only maybe some of the equipment that's out there right now in the market that's geared to really help your game, but also how to be properly fitted. We're going to get some of the pros that come on the show that night to talk a little bit about some of the proper ways to be fitted and what you need to be looking for, especially if you're looking for getting a new set of clubs in the next little while. Also, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't cover instruction, so we're going to have some great guys and gals on the program as well to talk about the instructional side, some do's and don'ts, things to look out for, and how you can actually help your coach or teacher prepare for a better lesson to give you. And you might think, well, maybe that should be the other way around. No, actually, it's a two-way street. You need to also help the instructors out there by giving them certain information and helping them put something that's going to be better for you to help your game in the long run. Also, we're going to put together some great practice strategies on how to go out and make the best valuable time. We know everybody's time is valuable, rather, and make the best use of your practice session. So we're going to help you with that. And, of course, again, we would be remiss if we didn't cover the mental side. We've had some great mental coaches on the program, but we're going to get into a little bit more on some things that you can do to sort of tap into your mental side a little bit better. And I'm going to talk about something that I've been doing on the other show, Women of Golf, with Cindy Miller in just a moment here on that very topic. But so we're going to have these topics as part of the Coach's Corner segment beginning in September. give the guys a little bit longer break. I'm actually going to have one of our general coaches corner segments, I believe, next week on August the 7th, the first Thursday in August. Gosh, it's hard to believe it's coming into August tomorrow. But anyways, I don't know where the summer's going, but it's just zipping on by. But we'll have a few people on that program, and we'll take some more email questions that have come in the last few weeks. So please be patient, but keep them coming. Keep the email questions coming in, and I'll give you that email address here in just a second where you can send them in. But we'll get to that next week. And, of course, we're going to wrap up on the Plan for Success series. We're going to wrap that all up in a follow-up segment to all of the others. And each of these, the fitness, nutrition, equipment, instruction, practice, and mental side, are all going to be individual shows. So we're going to focus the entire Coach's Corner on each of those topics, and then the final one will sort of wrap everything up together and give you sort of a general overview. But just let me remind everybody, of course, I'm live on the air right now. Every Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's 7 p.m. for those of you on the East Coast, and I believe that's 4 p.m. for those of you on Pacific Time. So 6 p.m. Central, thanks for joining in. And that's on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and the best way to get us there is blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. And if you don't want to type all of that in, not a problem, just go to the Blog Talk Radio website at blogtalkradio.com and go up in the search key and type in Golf Talk Live. You'll get me that way as well. Anytime during the live broadcast, which is from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time every Thursday evening, except for those when I take a little break here and there, you can call into the program at area code 646-716-4667 anytime during the live broadcast. Always happy to take some calls. And that number again is area code 646-716-4667. And for those of you that maybe have some questions or comments for the show, if you want to email me personally, you can do so at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And also for those of you that are tuning into the program, maybe you've been listening for a little while and maybe you're in the golf business and you'd like to participate, maybe you feel you have something that is worth sharing with my listening audience, I'm more than happy to entertain the possibility. So shoot me an email as well and let me know what it is that you do or where it is that you're, maybe you work at a course or you work in an academy and you'd like to come on, or maybe you feel that if you're a coach or a teaching professional and you want to add your thoughts and views into one of the Coach's Corner panel segments as well, by all means, shoot me an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Also get your updates on social media for the show at facebook.com, and that's /golftalklive blog. Make sure that you have blog on the end of that. That's facebook.com/golftalklive blog. And make sure while you're visiting the page, I always appreciate you throwing a like my way. I appreciate that. And you're welcome to post any comments or if you have questions or maybe a topic that you would like to have covered on the program. I'm always happy to entertain that as well. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. As I've said many, many times, I don't do a lot of tweets, but you can certainly follow on Twitter and get updates for the show. And that's under my my business Twitter account, and that's Ted and Buck. That's TEDANDBUCK. Buck, of course, is my business partner, CEO. That's Ted and Buck, CEO. CEO, of course, is in caps. Make sure that you follow me on Twitter as well there. And I have updates every week when I post the shows as to who's coming on and so forth. You can get the link directly from Twitter as well. So either Facebook or Twitter, you're welcome to. And also make sure that you check out the Golf Talk Live website. That's at www.golftalkliveblog.com. And make sure that you check out all of the pages there. And again, if you have any comments or questions, you can certainly email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And for those of you that want to have your questions read out and answered on the Coach's Corner panels, you can email your questions to questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's questions.golftalklive@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy. Make sure you include your name and where you're calling from. You don't need to include your entire address, of course, but if you're calling from a specific state and city or state, just let us know where you're calling from. It's just kind of interesting to find out where everybody is contacting the show from. And if you rather want to come on live and you want to pose a question to the panel, we're certainly more than happy on those evenings as well. You can call into the program at 646-716-4667. And just to let you know who's going to be on the program tonight, Russell Kirk, who's an Atlanta-based photographer, he's going to be coming on the program at the beginning of the show here in just a few moments. And a little bit later, I'm going to be interviewing, of course, LPGA professional Jamie Zimron. And she's from the West Coast out in the San Francisco Bay Area. So she's going to be coming on a little bit later in the program. And got lots of great stuff to talk about tonight. But let me just, while I'm waiting for Russell to come on to the program, he's going to be here in just a few moments. Let me tell you a little bit about what I did on my very short vacation. Carol and I, of course, I might have mentioned the program before, is my girlfriend, and we decided to take a little road trip. We love doing a road trip every year and want to do something a little bit different. And neither one of us had really spent much time before in the Miami area. And some people might be thinking, well, this is the summer and it's hotter than Hades in Miami. It actually was a little bit cooler, believe it or not, than it is here in Panama City Beach, Florida. Merely because, even though I'm on the Gulf here, there seems to be a little bit more breeze down in the Miami area than there is here. And so it was actually quite nice. But needless to say, we left about a little over a week ago now, and we went by way of Naples and decided to spend a night in Naples, and went out and had a great evening and had some great dinner downtown Naples, and actually went out and did a little dancing, which I don't do too much anymore, but Carol managed to drag me out and said she wanted to do a little dancing that night. So we did that. That was, I think, on the Friday night, if I recall. And what was kind of interesting about it, though, and I know this is what we're talking about here is really not golf, but I just thought I would share a little bit, which was kind of humorous. And I don't want to say this as a criticism, but if you've ever been to the Naples area, you'll certainly understand what I'm talking about. Naples is certainly a very affluent area, a lot of very wealthy individuals going there, of course, have residence there, some primary and some, of course, secondary. A lot of elderly folk there, which nothing wrong with that. But the one thing I noticed when we were out on the Friday night was just the innate, and I apologize to all of the ladies that may be tuning into the program here, but I don't think in my entire life, and I've been to California a couple of times, have I ever seen more Botox and plastic surgery than I did in Naples, Florida this last week or so. And, you know, I understand that, you know, we all want to look our best, but there comes a point in time, I think, that too much is too much. And there was certainly several representations on the Friday night when we were out and about. And I just got to say, ladies, you're all beautiful. I love you all, but enough is enough. And I just think that, you know, that's just my two cents. So I hope I don't offend anybody by that. And to each his own, and everybody's entitled to do what they want, but I just, it just was a little bit more than what I could bear. And anyways, enough of that. But of course we went on to Miami, always an adventure when we go on these road trips. And this one was nonetheless. And we had a great time, did a lot of great things when we were in Miami. Of course, drove around and checked out a lot of different sites and things, and went on a boat cruise a couple of times while we were there just to check out the area and just really enjoyed that. Of course, had my senior moment when we arrived on Saturday. We, as I said, stayed in Naples Friday night and then went across Alligator Alley into Miami on the Saturday, and got there sometime in the midday and stayed in the Coral Gables area at the Hyatt Regency, which is, if I want to give out a shout out to the people at the Hyatt Regency, thank you very much. What a great hotel. And it's in the Coral Gables area, which is a very picturesque area of in the Miami region. And it's about 10 minutes from the downtown skyscrapers and so forth. So it was just perfect for us, and a lot of great restaurants in the area. But what was my senior moment, we decided to, you know, the first day that we would kind of go right downtown and kind of check things out. And as I said, I've been through Miami before, but never really spent a lot of time there. So we decided we wanted to do something different. We just had a few days to spend this year and wanted to go somewhere that neither one of us had really spent a lot of time. And that we'd actually planned on going down to the Keys for one day as well, just to have some fun. But unfortunately, that got rain creeped up on the last day, and we weren't able to make it down there. But needless to say, we had some great fun in Miami. But let me tell you my senior moment here. So as I said, we're proceeding to go downtown. This is on the Saturday, and we were going to an area called Bayside, which is right down, not too far from the American Airlines arena, which, of course, the Miami Heat play in. And we were going down there, some shops and restaurants and stuff, and you can also pick up some of the boat tours and stuff there. So we wanted to check it out. Well, in the downtown area, of course, there's a lot of parking lots. And this, of course, is where my senior moment came in. And it could have ended up worse. But anyways, as we're proceeding to look for a parking spot, there's all kinds of, you know, people sort of waving you into their lots and so forth. Well, this young gentleman is waving, and of course Carol and I spot him and decide, well, this looks like a good spot, it's going to be close to where we want to go, and we decide to pull in, and unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize that this was a metered lot, and I don't mean individual meters, but they have the single booth, and you go up and you purchase your ticket, and then you go back and put in your car, and I wasn't aware of that. So as I'm driving up, and this attendant's waving on their signs there, it said $10 all day, and so on and so forth. The young man waves up, and I roll down my window, and I said, how much is it? He said, it's $10 for the day. So I said, okay, where do you want us to park? And I handed him a $20 bill. And I'm looking for a spot. He said, well, just drive around these cars here, and you can get some great spots on the other side there. And as I said, as I preface this, I didn't realize this was a sort of a pay-as-you-go type deal. So as I'm driving around, And the young man on back up, the young man says to me, he says, let me just run to the booth and I'll get you some change. Well, he ran all right, ran right across the street and up about probably two or three blocks before I clued in and realized that I'd just been ripped off. Positive note of this on this little story was in addition to the 20 I had in my wallet, I had several $100 bills, and I'm just very thankful I didn't hand him one of those. But needless to say, if you're ever in any of major city, whether it be Miami or anywhere, and you're dealing with a situation like that, don't have a senior moment like me and just hand the, just assume that you know what's going on and hand somebody your money without really knowing for sure that that's what you're dealing with. And I hope that the gentleman had a drink or maybe a meal on me at my expense, and hope he enjoyed that $20. Anyways, I just thought I would share that. But I had a great time otherwise in Miami, had a lot of fun. And I'm going to take another trip down there. I know there's some great golf courses in the area, and I want to go down there and check some of them out as well. But anyways, had a great time in Miami, had lots of fun. And as I said, we visited South Beach, of course. I had to go through there, and that was quite the eye-opener in its own right. Had a lot of fun, as I said, while we were there, and definitely we'll make a point of going back. But I see my guest this evening is ready to go, my first guest. Atlanta-based photographer Russell Kirk, of course, brings a passion for golf to his photographs, and he's got over 30 years' experience. Russell has photographed courses in over 26 states, 14 countries, covering three continents, and you can learn more about Russell and see some of the great photography that he has at his website at www.golflinksphotography.com. But let me bring Russell on the show, and we'll have a great chat with him. Good evening, Russell, and welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Thank you very much, Ted. A pleasure to be here.
Not a problem. I was just, before you came on there, I was just explaining to the listeners my wonderful time down in Miami for vacation, and I don't know if you were able to listen to any of the program before while you were waiting or not, but I was explaining about how I had a senior moment when I was in Miami, and ended up giving a young man some money when I was going into a parking lot, and didn't realize that it was a sort of a pay-as-you-go park and not a attendant. In other words, it was a metered parking.
And yeah, I did hear you. Good, like you said, good thing you didn't give him the $100 bill.
Yeah, and you know what? I was so angry, and I just thought to myself, he probably needs it more than I do. So good riddance. But anyways, I thought I would share that. But Russell, I know that I've been through your site many times, and you've got some fantastic work, and I want to talk to you a little bit about your site and what people can see on there. But first, I just wanted to ask you, of course, everybody has a deep passion inside them. Was photography yours?
I actually started as an advertising photographer in New York City in the late 70s, and try to give you the Reader's Digest version. My dad had also been a photographer, and I watched my father as he reached his early 60s, the business turn on him. It was all of a sudden he was too old, and it was like you're not there, and I watched what it was doing to him and how it ate him up, and basically said, I would never let this happen to me. And ironically, I read an article about another gentleman who photographs golf courses, and this is probably in the late 80s, early 90s, and I thought this was interesting. Researched the market to see how many people were doing it at the time full-time, very few. I went out, put a portfolio together, got lucky enough to get hooked up with the nice people at, it was the Majors of Golf back then, or the Major Series originally, and now the people that publish PGA Magazine, and they gave me my break, and here I am 20 years later, still shooting golf courses and absolutely loving it.
Yeah, and let me just tell the listeners, for those of you that haven't had a chance, and I'll read out throughout the program again Russell's website, but if you go to golflinksphotography.com, which is Russell's website, you can see some great, and they are truly great great pictures, photographs that you have on the site, and strongly suggest that the listeners go and check that out, and we'll talk a little bit more some of the other things that you offer there, but what made you decide to shoot golf imagery specifically in courses? I know that you've got a lot of great ones on there. What specifically, I mean, you could have gone into any really area of photography. What were some of the things that attracted you to the golf industry?
Well, I've been playing golf for longer than I want to remember or longer than I want to admit to. And I just love the sport. And, you know, I would go to a golf course early in the morning to play and just saw the beauty of it. And It was just a way to marry my love of the sport and my ability as a photographer and to be able to make a living at it. So it's...
Yeah, I can remember years ago before I obviously teach golf now, but years ago I used to work at when I was still back up in Canada, I used to work at a golf course, and I remember one of the things that, I enjoyed was very early in the morning. I mean, very early in the morning. Of course, at that time, I was, cutting greens and so forth. And, we used to, be literally the first ones out in the golf course before many of the members, except for there was this one woman who probably at the time, I guess, would be early 60s. And she was the only one of all the people that used to go to that course that ever beat us out there. And I don't know how she did it, other than the fact that she did live across the streets. So I'll give her that. But she'd be out there and play nine holes every single morning. I don't think there was a day that she ever missed. And it was just her and I and the other greenskeepers and that, and a few deer that would be out there. But it was just really breathtaking. I don't think people really understand, because they go during the, sort of the thick of things when it's crowded and stuff. But if you get out there, ever get a chance to go on a golf course very early in the morning particularly, or very late in the day as the sun's coming down when there's not as many golfers, of course. A lot of great courses out there, just some really beautiful views, and I can understand why your passion for photography would be fulfilled there.
Yeah, it is, and it's the hours that you discuss are what a photographer, any photographer that does what I do or does landscapes, they call the magic hours. That's early in the morning, late in the day, and it's just, it can't be beat. It's incredible, and the other great thing that I love about what I do, I guess is the best way to say it, is where you were reflecting on a senior moment. The fact is, I'm a senior and the rest of it, but golf doesn't care how old I am. I never go to a golf course to go photograph for a client where I pull up and get out of the car and somebody looks at me and goes, oh my God, he's old. The sport so reveres tradition that it's just, I'm looked at, and the other people that do what I do, because I know most of them, they're all, they're all older, and we don't get looked down upon. So it's a wonderful, wonderful business, wonderful industry.
Well, and the interesting thing, and that's a great point, Russell, it's really about the only sport that I know of, that when you hit about that 30, 35 age or even early 40s, and I'm talking obviously on a professional level, that your career is over. I mean, there's players, Nicklaus is a great example, and Palmer, many of the other greats that played well into their 60s and beyond and 70s and so forth, competitively, and of course, many of them now have retired, but from from competitive golf, but they're still playing and they're still around that sport. A lot of other sports you can't do that for physical reasons, but also, too, the industry just does not support it the same way as the golf industry does. So that's a valid point, and I think that's why so many people, particularly those that maybe didn't take it up early in life, but as they get closer to the retirement years, sort of gravitate to that because it's a sport that they can play. I mean, I know people that are in their 90s that are still out there, you know, may only be playing nine holes, but they're playing golf nevertheless. Very few sports you can do that.
Yeah, well, I belong to Settin' Down Creek Golf Club here in Atlanta, and I play each Sunday with a gentleman, a retired Marine Corps colonel that's probably 88 or 89, and he's out playing 18 holes and loving it. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it certainly is. Do you have any favorite locations, and it doesn't necessarily have to be course, it can be resorts or what that you've taken photos of, anything particular that enjoyed that just wow?
Well, to me the most special is St. Andrews. It's hard to describe to somebody who hasn't been there what it is. To me the great fact is you go tee off on the first tee, or you're standing, you know, 30 feet from the R&A building. You basically tee off within about 10 feet of where the pros tee off for the Open Championship when it's played there, and it's just something special. Everybody to me needs to experience that. Other resorts, I've only been to, in my total career, maybe three or four golf courses where I would jokingly say they ruined a good cow pasture. They should have left it, the cows,
yep,
alone and left it that way. There's very, very little I haven't. You know, I've had incredible experiences. I stood at New South Wales Golf Club in Australia shooting a hole that's much like Cyprus. It's a par 3, but this one goes across Botany Bay. But the Pacific Ocean was 20 feet behind me, and the sun rising over the Pacific. So really hard to beat it. And stuff.
Yeah, and you know, this is the thing. You know, I agree with what you were saying too. You know, there's a lot of fantastic courses out there, and not to knock, you know, anyone, but I think sometimes, you know, in the past, that whether it be the architects that designed it, you know, just try to, you know, I guess for lack of better words, go to town, if you will, sort of ruining the natural landscape, if you will. Just by, you know, trying to make it look, you know, the biggest, the best, and so on and so forth, and really kind of took away from the natural beauty of that particular area. So, and I'm sure you've seen a lot, as you said. Now, we're not going to name names, but I'm sure you've seen some of that along the way.
Yes, you know, it happens occasionally, but, you know, a lot of times that's almost forced on them by the developer, you know, make me bigger, better,
right,
and the rest of it. It's hard. I mean, you know, I don't know that I would want to be an architect having to satisfy, you know, what that person wants.
No.
I get the advantage of generally I go out there and they just say to me, make beautiful pictures. And I don't get people second guessing me, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in addition to some great courses, you also have some great pictures of Woods, Arnold Palmer, and of course recent major winner Rory McIlroy. How did those come about, and have you got some others in the mix that you can share that you're working on?
Well, the stuff in there where you see the people, the like I said earlier, I started my career as an advertising photographer in New York City, and I photographed people for ads in real life situations. So I am probably unique amongst all golf course photographers that I have that background. I'm not at a loss to have strobe equipment in my hands and do that. So I've been fortunate enough that I have clients that recognize that they can get more out of me than just the golf course. The Rory McIlroy image that you picked up on was a sheer accident. No, I don't want to say a sheer accident. Right place, right time. I was at the U.S. Open at Congressional, standing on the back of the 16th tee on Friday. You know, the USGA had hired me to be there. I was standing there. Rory and his caddy came. They had to wait to tee off because 16 is that reachable par 5. So they were there. The
right.
shock was that Rory's caddy walked over to the ice cooler, pulled out some ice and dropped it down Rory's shirt while they were standing there, which surprised the daylights out of me. Middle of the round, United States Open, and his caddy is doing something like that. And that's the end of three or four images that I got as he was pulling his shirt tail out to get the ice cubes out. And the last image is literally him getting ready to throw the ice cube back at his caddy.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. Coming up, I'm fortunate enough to shoot for the PGA of America, and I will be out on the road in this next month shooting the three Merchandise of the Year award winners, the Professional of the Year, and the Teacher of the Year. And stuff.
Wow.
So I count myself lucky.
Yeah, and obviously you been to a lot of tournaments and you get the opportunity to do that, which makes it interesting. You get to, and it's not just a question of being with and watching a lot of the pros, but you get to see some great golf along the way. And do you ever feel like you get a few good tips, and not necessarily directly, but just from watching some of the pros, things like, wow, you know, I got to try that or something like
yeah,
that. Do you ever pick up any
you
tips?
You do. I actually tend to do very little tournament work by choice. When photographers that do tournaments, I give them a lot of credit, but you know, unfortunately to me, I like my images to be unique. And when you do a tournament,
right.
You know, you can shoot a picture and there's like 10 photographers standing around that hole shooting essentially the same image. I much prefer to do what I do. But yes,
right.
I mean, I for a while ago used to shoot with Golf Magazine and shoot top 100 instructors. There I would always ask information. You know, it's great to find little bits of stuff that might help, you know, a bad golf game.
Yeah. Now, obviously, those that have been on the website will know this, but for the benefit of those that have not, if any of the listeners that might be interested, you also offer for purchase a lot of your great work. What's the best way to do that? Is it through your website?
Through the website.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, through the website, they can look at I have a list of every course I've shot. They're not images up of every course that I have photographed, obviously, because my website would be huge. But they can look through the list if they choose. There's a section for contacting me. They can contact me, and I will send them a folder of images that they can view, and then they can purchase prints directly from me.
Fantastic. And also, if anyone is interested, because I do get a lot of listeners that work at courses and different areas of golf around the world, again, what's the best way to get in touch with you? Through the site?
Through the site is the best way. There are phone numbers to my business and, you know, to my office and to my cell phone, and also the access to a direct email address.
What are some? Let me just ask you just another question or two, because I know that you've got a lot of stuff on your plate, traveling and that. But you obviously get a chance to do a lot of traveling with your job. What are some of the things that impress you the most in golf?
I've yet to find or meet a PGA professional or a golf course superintendent and staff that doesn't love what they're doing. And that's unique. When I was a very young man, my father's biggest words of advice to me are, make sure that you love what you're doing, because you don't want to wake up 20 years from now going, I hate my job. I honestly believe I've never found somebody that hates his job. And stuff, and that's what I think is unique and special about it. I mean, you know, it's you just look at the whole thing, and it's wonderful. I seriously, no complaints.
Yeah, I think one of the only drawbacks, and I think if you talk to most teaching professionals, they'll probably tell you this, especially those that have been in the business for any length of time. The only drawback is, especially if you've got a large portfolio of clients, is you don't always get to play as much as you used to before you got into the teaching end of it. That's probably one about the only drawbacks. You get lots of time on the course, but it's usually for a playing lesson or something to that effect. You don't always get to play yourself as much as you did earlier on in your career. So that's one of the drawbacks, unfortunately. But you know, what a great office to walk into every day as, you know, to play, you know, to be on a great golf course like that, like some of them, the guys do out there. And I enjoy it. I know I love working with a variety of different students. I do a lot of corporate work, of course, is the bulk of mine. But, you know, I get a lot of guys wanting to tune up for their you know, annual corporate events, or I get CEOs and so forth that want to, you know, not look bad in front of the fellow workers or for business, whatever the case may be. So I get a lot to work with a lot of different individuals. I don't do as much with juniors, Matt, at this point, just because there are so many out there programs, but I certainly enjoy it and I love the game and it's a lot of fun. And I certainly appreciate Russell for you for coming on the program and sharing that. And I want to just remind the listeners as well that if you want to either get in touch with Russell or you want to just check out some of Russell's work, maybe you're considering doing some redecorating if you've got your golf cave, as it will, and you want to have some great photography, you definitely want to check out Russell's work, and that's at www.golflinksphotography.com. And you can get in touch with him there if you're working in the industry and you want to have him come out and shoot some great work for your course or your facility. You can do so through the website as well. Russell, any final thoughts that you'd like to share with the listeners?
No, I just, Ted, I appreciate the fact you had me on the show and you know, it's been quite enjoyable. It's, like I said, it's the great part about the industry, you know, people helping each other out. So thank you.
Well, yeah, not a problem. And thank you for reaching out to me. You know, I try to, with this program, stay away from a lot of the traditional programming out there by which, you know, everybody said, I've made no bones about this on my program in the past. You know, I don't want to be another stats guy that just rambles off who won this and who won that. And there's just too much of that out there, and you know, all the power to them. But I wanted to really be able to offer something like this, where people such as yourself that are in the industry that have got some you know, a great business, and just sort of share that with people out there, because a lot of people don't know. You know, there's a lot of get a lot of great teacher professionals that come on here that maybe have something of interest to offer, and they don't always get an opportunity to get on a lot of different programs. And not everybody is going to make it on the Golf Channel or on ESPN Golf, and those guys do a great job for what they do. But I feel that there's a whole market out there of professionals in the golf business that need some help as well, and I'm more than happy to do that. So I'm glad to have you on, Russell. Thank you for sharing for your time.
You know, thank you. It's to be able to reach a national market like this for, you know, a little tiny business like myself is absolutely wonderful.
Well, one of the great things of this, too, is actually it's international. We have listeners from all over the world tuning into this program each and every Thursday night, and that's one of the great things about this. And also, you know, the program, even though we're currently live now, auto-records, so, you know, I can direct people at a later point if they want to. If they miss the episode, they can go in and tune into it later. That's the great part of this format. But Russell, you do some fantastic work, and you're welcome to come back. If you've got anything happening in the next little while that you want to come back and share with the listeners, I'm more than happy. Just reach out and let me know, and you're welcome to come back on again.
Okay, I would greatly appreciate it, Ted. Thank you. Hearing the fact that it's international, I travel real well. Passport is current.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, and you know, I get a lot of support in that from Ireland, Australia. I got a lot of people tuning in from Australia. You know, of course, Canada and here in the United States. You know, Mexico, you name it. There's virtually a country that I could name that you know, tunes into the program. So that's what's great about it. So it's a multifaceted, multicultural and program. Everybody tunes in and enjoys it, and I get lots of great feedback. So glad to help you out, Russell, and by all means, please keep in touch, and anytime you want to come back in the program, you're more than welcome.
Okay, thank you very much, Ted.
Not a problem. You have a great evening. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, that was, as I said, Atlanta-based photographer Russell Kirk. Talking a little bit about photography, a passion that he has been nurturing for now over 30 years in the business. And if you want to get in touch with Russell, by all means, I strongly suggest you go to his website at www.golflinksphotography.com and not only check out some of the imagery, But also get in touch with Russell if you're interested in having him put some great photographs together for your course or maybe for your outing and so forth. So check him out by all means. And again, thank you, Russell, for joining me here on Golf Talk Live. I've got Jamie Zimmron coming on here in just a little bit, but before she comes on, let me just I would be remiss, of course, as a Canuck for not talking a little bit about the Canadian Open. Of course, the Canadian Open was on just recently and played at Royal Montreal. And congratulations, of course. I'm not going to get into all the stats, of course. I just got finished telling Russell I'm not your stats guy, but I want to send a congratulations, of course, to the winner, Tim Clark of South Africa, for winning the Canadian Open this year. And, of course, as I said, Tim's from South Africa. A lot of other notables from that area. Of course, Ernie Els, Retief Goosen, and also from there, probably one of the most famous South Africans is, of course, Mr. Gary Player, the Black Knight himself. Runner-up, of course, was Jim Furyk at 16-under. Sorry, Tim's final score, of course, was 17-under par to win the tournament. And Jim Furyk, of course, was runner-up with 16-under. A couple of other notables was from the USA was Matt Kuchar at tied for fourth at 4-under. Tied for fourth. Sorry, that's not the score. He was tied for fourth. I'm not sure what his score was. I didn't have it in front of me. A few Canadian notables, of course, tied for seventh was Graham Dillette, I believe it's pronounced, at 10-under par. He was the highest ranked Canadian in the Canadian Open. And behind him, of course, tied for ninth was Brad Fritsch at 9-under. There were a lot of Canadians in there. Certainly would have loved to, not to take away from Tim's win, but would have loved to have one of the Canadians win the tournament, just being from there. Little disappointed, though, in Mike Weir, of course, who came very close back a number of years ago in a loss to a playoff to Vijay Singh at Glen Abbey. And I had an opportunity to actually be at that tournament. Mike tied for 66 in this tournament here this year in 2014 at 2-over par. So not a great round, but part of the reason, of course, is Mike doesn't seem to play as much as he once did. Of course, he was a Masters champion back a number of years ago and was probably his most notable win on the PGA Tour. Has won some other tournaments, but the Masters, of course, was probably his biggest win. Congratulations again, Tim Clark, for your win in the Canadian Open. I gotta admit, I miss watching the Open. Live, I used to go to Glen Abbey all the time up in Oakville, and of course that was a Nicklaus-designed course, and that was the only tournament that Nicklaus didn't win, where he had designed the course. Canadian Open at Glen Abbey, he designed that course, and of course never managed to win there. And I remember watching him back in, I believe it was probably the mid-80s, I guess. I remember watching him had a very similar bunker shot. I believe it was on the number 9 hole to what Tiger Woods did on 18 there a few years back. Mind you, I don't think he hit a 6-iron. I believe it was a 4-iron that Nicklaus picked out of the fairway bunker, but hit a great shot and landed on the green, and I think he made his putt, if I'm not mistaken, for birdie. But a lot of great memories there. Certainly miss that, and hope I get an opportunity to get back up there and watch some more. But anyways, I've got another great guest coming up tonight. I'm very excited to have her on the program. And let me just read you a little bit about Jamie. My guest, of course, coming up here in just a few moments is Jamie Leno Zimmron. And she's an LPGA teacher professional as well as the golf sensei. And she has a very unique approach to the game. She's played for a number of years. She's also the creator of the Ki Golf and the Ki Way peak performance trainings. Truly a great golf pro, certainly like no other. And let me tell you, Jamie knows golf. She's been playing since the age of 7. She was a state and national junior champion and won three senior pro titles, as well as 3 gold medals in international competition. And Jamie, of course, lives out in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. So she's a West Coaster. And she certainly understands the challenges of business, and she's been a successful entrepreneur for over three decades, an executive trainer, and speaks for CEO and speaks at for CEO and corporate groups through Vistage International. She also knows the body and mind. She's got a master's degree in clinical psychology, a marriage family therapist license, and an array of body work and fitness expertise. She's also helped thousands of individuals realize their potential and attain their goals. So, very hardworking individual. Certainly knows women and their empowerment, and is among one of the top women martial artists in the U.S. and worldwide. Ran her own Aikido, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, school, and co-founded the Association of Women Martial Arts Instructors, and is a pioneer in the women's martial arts movement, martial arts for peace projects, and extending Aikido principles into daily work and life. Above all, Jamie knows how to teach. Her aim and greatest joy always is to communicate clearly, make learning fun and effective, and to see every woman make real and lasting progress on her own path. And I kudos to you, Jamie, for doing that. I couldn't wholeheartedly agree anymore. Whether speaking at a conference or a corporate event or working with golfers on the lesson tee and golf course, Jamie inspires with her dynamic teaching style, good humor, and intricate knowledge. She is an all-around exceptional athlete and instructor, and is looking forward to meeting and working with the fantastic women that come out and meet with her at different outings. Great successes at upcoming training events. And as I said, she is a fifth-degree keto black belt, somatic psychologist, and also a body worker and fitness trainer. And just traveled all over the world, as I said, not just here in the U.S., but Canada, Russia. She's been to Israel, Palestine. Just done a great body of work, and I certainly wanted to have her here on the program. So without any hesitation, let me welcome my guest, Jamie Zimron. Jamie, welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Thank you, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. I appreciate you taking some time out, and I know you've been traveling a lot the last little while. In fact, you travel quite a bit. As I was just letting some of the listeners, I was going through your bio here and just reading out some of the things that you have accomplished and some of the things that you're doing. And I just wanted to, but before we get into things, Jamie, let me just ask you a little bit about your background. And it's actually sort of two questions rolled into one here. For, obviously, I want to let the listeners know how you sort of got started into golf and why. But you've obviously developed, as I was just mentioning, an early, obviously were very talented in golf. Developed a very early age. You won several junior titles as well as a trio of senior titles and three gold medals in international competitions. Would it be fair to say that you were bitten by the golf bug?
Yes, it would. I got bitten very early. I was 7 years old, and I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which, believe it or not, is where I am at this very moment. I'm just driving along here in Milwaukee. I was here to do some trainings, and it's really been fun to kind of be full circle right back where I started from when I was seven. My parents started playing golf at that time, and so they took us out, you know, my brother and sister, they took us out, and I just kind of had a natural ability, I guess. I was swinging away, and back then there weren't all the great junior programs that there are now, and there were only a few, you know,
right,
few girls that played and a few boys that played. In fact, I just played golf today with one of my childhood friends. But I was shooting in the 80s when I was 10, and my very first tournament I won, and it was the Wisconsin State Junior Championship. When I just had turned 13 years old at the time. Yeah, so, it's a great game. What can you say?
Well, there's just, you know, as I was talking with Russell Kirk, the photographer that was on a few minutes ago, you know, we talked about really golf is one of the very few sports, I don't like to use always the word sports because it's really a game, but really one of the few games, if you will, that you can play well into your later years. Unlike many other sports, you know, by the time you're 30-ish, you know, even creeping 40, your career is pretty much over. But golf, you can play well into, even competitively, well into your later years and still be a major force, as many people on both the men's and ladies tour have done. and continue to do. Unlike many other sports, I said that quite often by the time you hit your mid to the late 30s or even early 40s, your career is pretty much over. But golf's sort of in that unique kettle of fish, if you will. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of my students down in San Diego, she began playing golf when she was, I think, 65 or so, and she's now 75, 76, I think. But she wrote a wonderful book called Shoot 70 at 70 is the title.
Wow.
And it's a book on golf fitness for seniors, and it's a wonderful resource. Her name is Marcia Hootman, H-O-O-T-M-A-N. I'm pretty sure you can get it on Amazon. But it's a really nice
right.
book, and it emphasizes just what you're talking about, not only that you can be competitive and continue to play golf well past the age that, say, football players or basketball players who are doing these heavy impact sports, you can also enjoy the game in your 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean, I think there are some people who are 100 years old playing golf, and it's, you can play at different levels. You can play in different levels of intensity, but I actually developed a fitness program that I call Make Your Golf Club Your Health Club, and I work with all levels of golfers, and including senior golfers, and you discover that your golf club, your golf swing, your golf game can really contribute to ongoing physical and mental and emotional fitness all throughout your life and definitely into your later years, probably in ways that other sports might not do so much, and not to mention the social aspect, just having a good time out there.
Well, and I think in this day and age, especially as, you know, with a lot of some of the younger players that have come up and you know, I'm going to obviously mention Tiger Woods, but with his, you know, efforts in the game, not just by winning so much, but by just pure force of followers and so forth, he's really sort of re-energized, and as many other players have, but Tiger really sort of, you know, bought into it when he first came on, a bit of a breath of fresh air, because golf was kind of, in certain ways, by some people's standards, was kind of getting a little bit routine, if you will, and even some have even come out and said it was a little bit stale, and he just sort of re-energized and brought a whole new segment of the population to sort of come in, and of course many others have continued that journey, you know, even after I'm not trying to say Tiger's out of the game yet, but since he's come on, a lot of the ladies have come out now, and same thing, they've re-energized women's golf, and I think it just needed a really big boost, and now golf is just everybody seems to want to play or get involved, so you know, it's been fantastic for the sport. And obviously, as we see some of these youngsters coming out and being more physically fit, it's changing really the dynamics of the game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that Tiger did and Annika Sorenstam on the women's side was to make golf actually more of a sport, or in the sense an athletic endeavor. It's a game, but
right.
it's also athletic, and you need some strength and stability in your legs. You need rotational ability. You need flexibility. You need to be able to extend in your backswing and in your follow-through down the target line and, you know, to a full finish. And so all of a sudden you go, oh, wow, I need some strength in my core muscles. I need some flexibility. And I'm actually performing an athletic activity when I'm making a golf swing. And so
right.
by, you know, Tiger's fitness regime has spread to all the touring pros, as has Annika's,
yep.
and that's just spread into, obviously, the general public. And so this, again, kind of gets into, like, make your golf club your health club, is to realize that we can get our physical fitness through golf. And obviously, we're taking, if you're still walking instead of driving, but even if you ride in a cart, be sure you get out and you walk, and there is walking involved. But if the actual motion of the golf swing is an athletic motion, and if you take yourself to any degree seriously as an athlete and begin to realize, oh, I'm an athlete here, then you start to treat yourself as one, and you do some physical conditioning, you do some mental conditioning, and the place I go with my Ki golf training is into that whole mind-body realm where we are connecting the mind and the body, and it becomes a self-mastery practice, which is a wonderful thing. And it's something that, because it's a sport and a game that we can play through all the decades of our lives, we get to have this ongoing kind of encounter with ourselves and an ongoing
right.
sense of personal growth and self-development and you know, of course, social interaction by playing the game of golf. So it's just a wonderful vehicle, and at any age.
Yeah, and that's so true. And you know, Jamie, the other thing is, you know, you and I both know, being in the golf business, I'm also an instructor, and you know, we understand the physical side of golf and the athletic side. But a lot of people, when they look at that, say, well, you know, it's not like you're running down the field or so on. They don't appreciate really, you know, the mechanics of the swing. And it's not just about, you know, getting your arm in this position and your hands in this position. I mean, that's part of the process, but it is an athletic swing. And it takes a lot of, you know, everything has to work in a certain unison. I mean, it might not look perfect by any standard in some cases. I mean, you go back to some of the older players like Lee Trevino, who didn't have the prettiest looking swing, but all the components were there. And certainly today's player is much more athletic minded, again, because of players like, you know, Tiger and Annika coming on the scene from the professional side. And then obviously, you know, others like yourself who working, you know, diligently to bring you know, a more athletic perspective to the game. But would you agree that most people don't really appreciate just, you know, the difficulty really that golf has from an athletic standpoint?
Well, what I would say is this, that I wouldn't want the word athletic to scare anybody away. I think we're all athletes.
Right.
We all have this inner athlete inside of us. We're physical beings, and it's nice if you can be in some kind of decent shape. What's really interesting is one of the things that I do in all of my trainings is that I have everybody go through the athletic motions of, for example, hitting a home run or throwing a pitch or throwing a baseball,
right,
or making a forehand in tennis or a backhand in tennis or a free throw at the free throw line, bowling. We go through all these different sports, skiing, and I have everybody kind of just pay attention to their motion. And even if you're not a great athlete or the most, you know, coordinated, talented person, athlete in the world, you don't need to be. Everybody begins the motion in their legs and their feet. I mean, a forehand,
right,
actually starts with your leg and your foot. A baseball swing starts not with the bat and the hands and the arms. It starts in the feet. And when you start to go through all the athletic motions, you realize that in skiing, to say parallel ski, you sort of edge your skis, then you put your pole down, and then you move your feet and your hips, your core, and then your hands. If you put the pole in first, that's when you fall. You lose your balance. So what I'm saying is that all sports work from the lower body to the upper body. It's, you know, the foundation. And in golf, one of the problems that I think that most people have is that they're trying to hit the ball with their arms. And they have these very armsy swings. They aren't connected to their power that's in what we call the core, the trunk of the body, and the hips and legs and feet. Actually, your feet control your hips. It goes down lower than your hips. And so once we go through all the sports and then we look at their golf swings, and they're even told, turn your shoulders, take it away with your hands, and all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
And they get real into the – and they're trying to muscle it with their upper body – and then they lose their balance, or they don't have the sort of stable structure, like the set for the swing. Then they start getting really interested, and they go, oh, well, this is kind of cool. And they start to connect to the core and also to the legs and the feet and to the power in the hips. And then the need to strengthen the quads, strengthen the hip flexors and the glutes and the back muscles, the spinal muscles that hold you up. Well, now when we're doing that, this helps everybody to just have better balance, better posture. For older people, it starts to prevent falls because they have that kind of strength in their musculature. They're having better balance. And so you start to find that, wow, we all need to be healthier, stronger, fitter, more present, more connected to our lower body and to the core muscles, and not just be out there working in our arms. Well, this has benefits in your overall health and in everything you do. And again, you know, we're all aging every day, and we start really getting up there. And that, you know,
don't remind me, Jamie. Be kind.
Yeah, I know. Me too. You know, but it's really nice. It's really nice to know that, wow, just even playing golf, I'm helping to prevent falls that could cause a bad injury, a broken hip, or whatever it is later on in life.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, I gave up a long time ago and battling the age and the age fight, if you will. And I mean, I know it's different, obviously, for men than it is for women. But You know, I had started getting wisps of gray hair when I was 17 years old, and when I first looked in the mirror and I saw that, and I thought maybe, you know, we were doing, and this is not no word of a lie, it was probably about 16 or 17, and we just happened to be doing some painting at home. And at first I thought I had brushed up against the wall. And under closer examination, I realized it wasn't paint, it was me and my hair. And, of course, now I'm pretty much all silver, and I just turned 50 this year. But I just decided, you know what, and I thought about years ago, and obviously this is something that most men didn't do really a lot of, but, you know, I thought about, well, maybe I should color a little bit or so forth. And I just said, no, I'm just going to deal with it. And, you know, I keep myself in pretty good shape, I think, and certainly could do better. But, yeah, I'm not going to fight the aging battle, if you will. I'm not going to cheat. I'm going to do it honestly, get out there and work hard and take care of my body and let nature take its course. But anyways, I just thought I would throw that in there. I want to ask you, you obviously sent a number of pictures over, not only profiles and so forth for yourself, but in the collection, of course, I had the distinct privilege last year of interviewing, of course, Mr. Billy Casper. Certainly a great man and asset to the game, and I see from some of the photos that you'd sent me that there were a few there, of course, with the legendary Billy Casper in there. Did you work with Billy?
Yes, he has a tournament every year in San Diego, and I lived in San Diego for about 15 years. I just a couple years ago moved back to the Bay Area. But before I moved back, I had the privilege and the joy, really, to work with Billy's tournament. It's called Billy's Kids. He's just done so much to, you know, support youth and raise money and give opportunity in a lot of different fields, not only golf, music, just all kinds of stuff for kids. So he has a tournament each year at San Diego Country Club. It's usually in the beginning of May. And for a number of years, I was able to work with him. And one of the things that I love to do at charity tournaments and have done it with Billy's tournament is to first offer a clinic, the pre-tournament clinic, and we do some of the warm-up exercises and swing patterning exercises so that, and I give people some, you know, kind of some different concepts about how to play better, you know, how to be more centered and more balanced and swing
right.
sequence. And then we do some of the fitness exercises, and they're always, you know, really fun and big hit, and it's fun to do in a group even. Maybe at many times I'll give a putting clinic. Billy, in fact, loved the putting clinic that I did because I have it's called the stubby putter. I don't know if anybody's ever seen it. They made them 10, 12 years ago. But the stubby putter, the face of the putter is exactly the size of the golf ball.
I remember that.
Well, to me, it's like all ball. It really teaches you to make centered contact. And if you hit it on the heel or the toe or the club is turning, it's very obvious what happens to the roll of the putt. So I brought out my stubby putter to really make that point about making totally centered contact with the golf ball. And Billy really got into it. We had a lot of fun putting with it. But anyways, then I also they sent me this on the golf course. I grab a golf cart and I just kind of tool around the golf course, and I hit shots with different groups, and that's always really fun. And they're able to use my shot if they want to, if it contributes to their play. So we try to add to the birdie totals out there. So yeah, it's just really been wonderful to meet Billy and to meet his family and to see the great community and work that he does and the community of people that he gathers is really tremendous.
Yeah, and I had a laugh when he was on because, you know, we had a few laughs, but, you know, he was very gracious. I actually talked to him the week before. I talked to him about a month before when we set this up and on a conference call with a business associate of his and who was also a guest that particular day. It was in November of last year. So if you get a chance, Jamie, go back, and I'll tell you later how to do that. But and get a chance to listen to the interview. It was a lot of fun, but you know, he came on to talk about his book, The Big Three and Me, of course, referring to Mr. Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player, and of course Arnold Palmer. And but you know, I've had the pleasure of you know, talking with a lot of different people in the golf business, and he's certainly got to be one of the most humble people I've ever had the pleasure of talking to, and he actually enjoyed being on the program so much that he actually was on for the whole 2 hours.
Wow, that's great.
Which was like, you know, I'm it was a blessing to me. I mean, I would, if I could have extended, I would have had him on 3 hours. But, you know, we talked, I mean, there was the other gentleman, of course, that he's had some business dealings with that we talked about that first. And then, of course, but Billy was on the whole time. And then we got into the book and started talking about some different things. And, of course, he's, you know, certainly very passionate about his tournament and about Billy's kids. But I had a laugh because, of course, he has a rather large family. And I tried to get the photo of his family, you know, in preparation for the show, but it was so large, it wouldn't, the file size wouldn't fit. So I told him, I said he's going to have to chop it up and send it in three segments, you know. But I heard it, and I don't know if you're, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but he talks about, have you read his book by any chance?
I have not read his book. I would love to, though.
It's a really good book.
Yeah, I mean,
really
when I was
book.
Growing up, when I was growing up, I so clearly remember Billy Casper, and it was kind of like that. There was the big three, but Billy Casper was right up there with him.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, you know, the difference was obviously in that day and age, you know, Jack sort of had his own unique style, and you know, Arnold, of course, had his following, and Gary Player. They all had their unique, and Billy was sort of a behind-the-scenes player. He was very effective and, you know, very methodical, but he really didn't like the limelight per se. He wasn't, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, trying to say that the others were, you know, showboats or anything like that, but they didn't mind being in the limelight more. And Billy was sort of behind the scenes, but he was, you know, if you look at his record, I mean, he was right up there.
Absolutely.
But what was it? He shared a very interesting story. And I don't even know if you're aware of this or not, but of course you're probably aware that, of course, Billy is Mormon. And he does a lot of speeches and so forth as he's traveling along. And he was telling about a story on the show that he was telling about where he met this this woman, and she was at one of the sessions that he was talking at the Mormon church. And I forget now, I think it was at the 1966 U.S. Open, I believe he said it was. And anyways, he was there, and this woman, it was on a Tuesday night, I think he said, and he was talking about how she came up and said, well, you know, I have a son who very interested in golf and wants to play professionally, and I'd love to get some of your advice. And he basically said to her that, you know, just, you know, let him be the one to sort of take the reins. Don't, you know, don't push him and be supportive and that sort of thing. Well, the interesting part of the story was it turned out that this woman's name, last name was Miller, and her son turned out to be Johnny Miller.
Johnny Miller. And
it was because of Billy's advice and comments that Johnny Miller pursued his golf career. And to this day, they still maintain a fairly close relationship. And I thought that was what a great story, really, when you think about it, how he impacted not only on the golf course, but how he impacted people outside of the course to pursue their dreams and their passions. And we all know Johnny Miller's career, of course, you know, from not only playing, but being on the announcer with NBC and so forth. But I thought, what a great story, you know, that he can look back and know that he's helped somebody. But I really enjoyed having him on there, and I saw the picture, so I had to ask. But I want to move on with what you're doing here. And, of course, you graduated Phi Beta Kappa at Stanford University, and you began studying back then. And I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this correct, so correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Aikido?
Aikido, yes.
Aikido, okay. You studied that as an undergrad in 75, and for those listeners out there that may not know what Aikido is, can you explain that?
Well, Aikido is a Japanese martial art. The martial arts in general that we're most familiar with tend to come from Korea, China, and Japan. There are others, the Philippines, Brazil, many other countries have martial arts, but those are the ones that we're most familiar with. And so Aikido is a Japanese martial art. The martial arts are also in broad strokes. You can kind of divide them into karate kinds of arts where you have punching, blocking, kicking, sparring, katas, form practice. And then you have martial arts like judo, aikido would fall in there, jujitsu, where there will be rolling and falling. They're called mat arts. And so what happens is a person comes and with a strike or a grab or a kick, whatever, some kind of attack, and then they're varying moves to kind of defend or to deal with that attack, and then there tends to be a throw. And so there's sort of, you could call it tumbling, rolls and falls and flying in the air and landing, all this kind of stuff. But
so
what really distinguishes...
Would it be fair to say... sorry, what I was just going to ask real quick, then, would it be fair to say then, as far as martial arts go, that this is more of an art that's a responsive to, in other words, it's not necessarily an aggressive form, if you will, it's more of a responsive to maybe, I mean, obviously there's other components to it, but is that kind of, if I got the right ideas, it's more of a responsive form of martial arts?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Aikido in particularly is known as a responsive or, you know, kind of martial. There's nothing aggressive about Aikido.
Right.
In fact, what distinguishes Aikido from other martial arts is this emphasis on the I in Aikido, or the I in Ki golf, and in my work, the Ki way. I is a kanji, a character in Chinese and Japanese, which not that I'm, you know, great know this language that well, but what I do know is that its meaning is love or harmony, unity, oneness. And so, and qi is Japanese, the Chinese is qi, and a lot of people have heard of things like tai chi or qigong.
Right.
So qi and qi, what that means is life energy. It's not a word that we really have in English or a concept that we have a word or a, you know, sort of a pictograph like they do in the East. So I and Ki is about this sense of unified life energy or harmonious life energy. And so in Aikido, let's say a strike comes in. You don't try to block it or go against it or overpower it. What you do is move with it. And there are ways that you can move with an incoming energy. And so we just see an attack as an incoming energy rather than something to be feared or to be fought against and overcome. When you can move together with that energy, then you can sort of join yourself with that and find that in a certain sense you're more powerful and you're going with the flow is a common way to express. And when you go with the flow instead of having to use some kind of brute force or reacting in fear or in anger or trying to overpower things, you find that you're you get amazing results through non-resistance, through harmony, through blending, through joining. And it's really quite an incredible thing. The founder of Aikido, his name was Morihei Ueshiba O-sensei. He died in 1969, but he was known as the greatest martial artist in Japan, probably in the 20s, 30s, and kind of World War II era Japan. He was only like 5 feet tall, and people heard that he could throw people without touching them, and he would say things, amazing things like, you can attack me day or night, for I'm always awake. And people would try in the middle of the night. You know, they come with a sword or something, they try to attack him. Nope, didn't happen. He knew. I mean, can you imagine you're always awake? I mean, you always had that kind of consciousness. And there were like karate masters who would come and challenge him. They would hear, who's this little guy who throws you without touching you? How does he do it? It's impossible. And sure enough, they'd go flying against the walls, and they became students of his. He modified varying techniques in Aikido. That would, for example, break an arm or dislocate a shoulder or break something. And he said, you know what, there's no need to cause harm. I don't want to get harmed, but I also don't need to harm. If I can neutralize this aggression, this attack, in a way that joins and blends, and that where I'm not reactive, and just stay in my center, I stay in this sort of masterful energetic place, develop my energy, my ki, my chi, while... So he developed some amazing powers and transformed the martial arts into what we call the martial art of peace. Now, how does this pertain to golf? There's lots of ways. But the first way is that golfers try to kill the ball. And they try to kill the ball. And going back to sort of the reference I made to upper body, using upper body muscular power and not having enough awareness about the incredible amount of energy and power that's located in our belly and our center and our hips and our legs, our base, our feet, and in a proper sequential movement that all other sports use. I figure we should. But anyways, by doing this, we find that we don't have to kill the ball. And I think a lot of people are surprised when they see the touring pros in person. If they go to a PGA or LPGA tour event, they discover that the pros are not trying to overpower the ball. They're always in balance. They're always in rhythm and sequence, and in a way that probably most amateurs aren't, right? Because we're out there trying to, you know, kill it, basically.
Yeah, and especially men. I mean, I think men are probably more guilty culprit to that than I think women are. I don't know whether the testosterone just gets, you know, going or something, and they decide that they've got to just try to kill it. More often than not, they have a terrible result. But, you know, that's what I wanted to really get into is, you know, I wanted to really talk about how, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the program when I was reading through your bio, you know, you're really a pioneer in core body mind training, and you offer a lot of opportunities for peak performance on really all playing fields of life and business, you know, family, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. So let's talk about how you sort of incorporate the Ki way into golf. How does it really sort of blend into golf? How are you using it in your programs? Yeah. And then let's talk about some of the benefits that somebody can expect by going through that.
Sure. Well, one of the first things is this whole notion of energy. And, in fact, here I am in Milwaukee. I just did a executive training for a group of CEOs this morning, which is some of the speaking and trainings that I do, and in the Ki way. And so what we start with is this notion of energy, and it's not something out of California. It's not something out of China and Japan and the East.
Right.
This is universal. This is what we really are. And so a question that I ask almost always in the beginning of my golf trainings is, what makes your golf ball go? Good question, yeah? What makes your golf ball go?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people say, well, because I hit it. Or then they
right.
talk about the swing and momentum, or they talk about the mind and intention, or they talk about the club making impact with the ball, or a transfer of energy from where to where, or from the
right.
club to the ball, these kinds of things. And, yeah, that's all kind of true, but it's still begging the question, what makes your golf ball go? And the answer I give is obvious once you hear it. What makes your golf ball go is you. I mean, a
right.
golf coach is sitting there. You pick it up. And
yeah.
it's kind of maybe
yeah.
a little different when you pick it up, or Tiger picks it up, or
mm-hmm.
you know, Annika, or whoever the woman is or the man is, right? But it's you,
yeah, exactly.
and you, and then you begin to understand, well, what's you? You is this life energy. We're born with it. It's in our bodies, and it's in our minds. It's in our emotions. Mm-hmm. So we have mental energy. We have emotional energy. We have physical energy. We have spiritual energy, which you could take in different ways. For now, we'll just talk
right.
about that as our goal, our passion, our purpose, our motivation, right? And so those
yeah.
are kind of the faculties that are going on. When you stand up at a golf ball, all of that's going on at once, simultaneously. Most golf training focuses on a kind of one or the other. Most actually focuses on physical. So physical fitness, technique,
yeah.
the clubs, yeah, and the equipment. And I think a lot of people have found that equipment alone doesn't improve their game. Technical lessons help, but that's not the only thing. And then sometimes more and more people are doing mental training, and maybe they'll go off to a hypnotherapist, or they'll listen to a tape, or try to do affirmations, and they're aware there's something about their mind they need to work on. people don't address a whole lot the emotional aspect, and yet the emotional
right.
aspect's really huge, because you're standing there, or you know, you're on the golf course, you're getting mad, you're getting afraid, you're getting sad, you're getting bummed out, you're getting elated, you're getting ecstatic, right, because something good happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like an emotional experience, sometimes a roller coaster. And to me, he or she who can be in a place where they are aware of all of these aspects and start to have some what I call mastery, being kind of more of a black belt, shall we say, in the martial arts terminology, of their energy systems, and knows that they all work together. They're all happening at once when you're standing there about to hit a golf ball. Correct? I mean, it's a simultaneous
right.
thing. You know, body, mind, emotion, spirit, it's all right there as you're standing there over the golf ball about to make this swing. And then you make a swing, you make a shot, and now you're having all sorts of emotional and mental responses to it. so
right.
that we need to manage as we're going to the next shot.
Right, and you know, the other thing, let me just interject real quickly here, and then I'll let you continue. You know, a really good example, and I talked about this, you know, on the other program recently. In fact, it was just this week. And one of the things that I mentioned, you know, I've seen a lot of players out there, non-professionals, who, from a physical standpoint, can probably hit just as well as most tour players, but they're lacking
mm-hmm.
something that is you know, enabling them to be playing out, you know, against Tiger and Annika or whoever the case may be. And this is really what you're talking about. I mean, you can be a great ball striker, but if you don't have some of the other elements that go with it, and this is what separates really some of the top players, even from the rest of the players on the tour. I mean, there's lots of people out there that on the tours, and some of them might win a tournament here and there. Some might not win anything, and then there's others that clearly dominate. And there's a reason for that. If you look at Tiger's, as an example, and I'm using him as an obvious example because, so many people have watched him with a microscope. But
sure.
If you look at his swing compared to just about anybody else's on the tour, it's really not any better as far as his ability goes. But he has other elements within himself that have made him the champion that he is. The same with Annika. Why has Tiger won X number of tournaments? Why has Annika won? Why is so-and-so? Why did Jack Nicklaus? There were other components besides, being a good or decent ball striker. And this is really what you're getting at. It's an all-encompassing energy, if you will, that we need to really go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there's a wonderful quote from Annika, and I use it in my trainings, and I use it in one of my talks this morning. And her quote is this: We are not human beings who happen to be golfers. We're golfers who are human beings. Okay?
Right.
And so the idea is, and she goes on to say, my goal of becoming number one was about improving myself as a total player and as a total human being. And that means addressing all these aspects of ourselves, not only our swing mechanics, not only our equipment. We have to deal with our psychology, with our self-talk, with managing our emotions throughout a round of golf, even from tee to green. And so she started to really expand her self-training into those realms, and also in a really integrated way. I once had a nice talk with her caddy, who talked about some of her martial arts training, in a sense. She also subscribed to something from two wonderful teachers, Pia Nielsen and Lynn Marriott. It's called Vision 54. And what Vision 54 is, is that you could birdie every hole. If you did that on a par 72 course, you'd shoot 54. And what does that mean? It was about limiting less. And I love the word limitless. It means limitless. It means that you could limit and stop limiting yourself in terms of what you're really capable of. And that begins mentally, and then it expands into, your physical capability. This is a basis for peak performance. And just feeling at the effect of your emotions. And so as she limited less and she subscribed to Vision 54, wow, she really started to win in so many unprecedented ways. Not only that, she's the only woman to this day on tour who actually has broken 60, who shot a 59 in a tour event. So, I think if we really take that to heart and say, I mean, I say this to people I work with, I'm not a CEO who happens to be a human being, I'm a human being who happens to be a CEO or a golfer or a mom or a dad or whatever role you're playing at the time. So when we really go into that aspect and start to, since it's you, it's me who makes the golf ball go, if I start to really work on myself and in an integrated way, wow, all these new things can happen. So a lot of my students, either if they're beginners, they get off to a really good start. If they're sort of the mid-handicappers or people have been playing a while and they've been plateaued, which is the case for a vast majority of golfers, they move off that plateau. They actually start improving. And if they're really good players, well, my gosh, they can really start to be even better competitors, win more, and do things that they've wanted to do, and they're finally actually doing them.
Yeah, and I think the industry, I mean, it's like anything, it's always slow to change. As human beings, we're always slow to change, our ways and so forth. And I think the industry is starting to, I'm seeing more and more, and I've experienced even with this program, some of the guests that have come on, they're starting to understand a lot of what you're talking about and starting to realize it's not just about the swing mechanics and so on. There's a lot more to golf and life really in general.
Let me just say this. This is kind of interesting when you think about it. I go to the PGA show almost every year in Orlando, and that's a couple million. million square feet of golf stuff. People always talk about walking the show, right? So I put a pedometer on my belt one day, And from 9 to 5, I was just walking the show back and forth, looking at this and that and talking to people. And inside the building, I actually walked 6.2 miles indoors, walking the show. And doing what? Looking at golf stuff, talking golf, looking at golf stuff. Now you can watch the Golf Channel 24/7. You can get every app on your phone. And I mean, there's so much information available. And the equipment alone in the last 25 years is off the charts. The equipment is so terrific. And all of that's meant to make us all better golfers. But if you look at, say, statistics of USGA on improvement of handicap as some kind of indicator, I mean, it's something like, I don't know, it used to be a quarter to an eighth percent. I need to double-check it. You know, the handicaps are pretty static.
They haven't changed much.
Yeah, and most golfers, if you go to the driving range of the golf course, most golfers kind of look the same and sound the same as they ever did. They look better as far as – the one thing that's really improved is golf fashion. I mean, that's no question about it. Golfers look better from a being dressed point of view. But outside of that, their body mechanics,
I'll agree. Yeah, Jamie, I'll agree 50% of that. And the reason why I say that is I was down at the PGA Show this year, and the ladies' fashion certainly, as it always does, looked great, but the men's fashion seemed to be the same. I think they just put the stripes and whatever on the other side of the shirt this year or something, but a lot of it was still kind of the same. Let me just ask you something real quick about want to spend a lot of time on equipment, obviously, but let me just get your thoughts on this, and you can yay or nay or agree or not. But I agree there's certainly been a lot of great strides with equipment, but one of the, I guess, criticisms, if you will, that I have with the industry, and I've made no bones about this on the program, is particularly where the driver is concerned. A lot of great strides, no doubt, and I understand it's a marketing, a ploy, if you will, but the thing that bothers me is I think a lot of people have looked at and promoted the driver as sort of the answer to everybody's, dream of playing better golf, and it certainly can enhance you, but the truth of the matter is, when you go out and buy that $400 driver, if you don't know how to use the equipment properly and get the most out of it, you're not going to get 10, 20, 30 extra yards as a lot of times it's, as claimed. And that bothers me a little bit because I think it's a little misleading. And again, I'm not trying to bash any manufacturers, but that concerns me a little bit because there's a lot more to golf than just going out and paying. And I think the $300, $400 driver, that money could be better spent in working with somebody, say, such as yourself, and improving. And then when the improvement's there, then go out and treat yourself, if you will, with that, upgraded driver. But really the equipment is really a tool that we use. And the pros certainly see a lot of difference when they're using this equipment. But on an amateur level, there is some difference, but it's not as much as claimed. Would you agree with that, you think, to some degree?
Well, yeah, definitely to some degree I agree with it. I mean, part of the point I was starting to make is that with all this information available and great equipment, here golfers aren't really improving that much. So I think that should suggest to us that maybe we're missing something. What could we be missing? And, well, we think we're missing fitness, and then we think we're missing equipment, and then we think we're missing mental game, and we think we're missing all these things, and they're all part of the puzzle. I think what we're missing is, yes, we need to address all those parts of the puzzle, and then we also need to address this whole notion, this whole matter of integration. How do I, as the golfer, who's the one making the golf ball go, really manage myself and in kind of an integrated way? How do I understand the interaction of my thoughts, my feelings, and my physical performance? And also, how do I understand what I'm like when I'm under stress? And a big part of my corporate TI training has to do with stress. And why do I say stress? And stress comes through in martial arts. When you're standing there getting attacked, right? Someone's swinging a sword or throwing a punch or throwing a kick at you. You're under stress, right?
Well,
and all of a sudden you can't think. You got freeze or you fight or you flee or you're afraid. And all these things happen. All those stress chemicals and hormones start kicking in and your heart's beating and racing and you're reacting. You're not thinking real clearly. So that's kind of why I bring martial arts into every training, is because it brings out our stress responses. Golf brings out our stress responses, right? You're standing there, like, why do they put a sand trap or a bunker? Why do they put a pond, a water hazard? Why do they put side hills and long grass and trees? I mean, all of that's there to stress us out, basically. to cause us to feel nervous and anxious. And so then the challenge is, again, this sort of self-mastery. How do I manage my mental game, my thoughts, my feelings, so that I can make, maintain my motor skills? Because you can make a perfect swing.
Right.
Everyone says, how come I can make a great swing on the driving range but not on the golf course? I can make a great practice swing, but then I can't do it when I'm at the golf ball. We get stressed out. And when we start to kind of study our stress responses, what are we like under pressure? What emotions get triggered? What beliefs get triggered? And then how is that impacting our physical motor capability? Well, now we start going into some realms that really pay rich, rich dividends. And so I don't disregard anything. I call it Ki club fitting. I mean, we should have clubs that fit our body and fit our capabilities and our strength level. But, you know, you want that to match up. You want there to be a harmony and the puzzle pieces to all fit together. But, when you start to look at things kind of in this more integrated way and then to pay attention not only to each part but also how they work together and how you're the one who is the center of it. We're each our own center, you know. It's us making the swings. It's us having the thoughts and feelings. And so, he or she who can manage that better at any level is going to start to improve.
Yeah, and I think really what I'm saying, Jamie, is with respect to the equipment. I mean, I understand the benefits of the equipment because I've played long. Much like you, I started at about seven and played pretty much all of my life. So I understand the benefits, and I understand the golf game, if you will, well enough that I can justify. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is that sometimes I get concerned that people are looking for sort of a quick fix to their golf game, much like people, when they get the sniffles, they're looking for the medicine cabinet to get something to get instant relief, but it may not be getting to the root problem. And this is why I get concerned a little bit. And I'm not, again, I want the equipment to be there. I'm not trying to get rid of it. But, I just think that some people are looking at it the wrong way and thinking that if they go out and they get this specific piece of equipment that is going to solve all of their slicing and it's going to solve all of their, problems on the golf course. And more often than not, they're doing the same thing come next year with the next one. And that's really what I was getting at.
Well, I share that with you, and particularly as an instructor. I like your idea. I have a beautiful DVD series. It's about $100. It's like that's a quarter of the price of a new driver. And how many new drivers or new putters or new wedges do people have? And they're still not getting anywhere. It's like, put $100 into this or lessons, but lessons that will really help you. Practice. If people would practice more. And not – the other thing is I find that people rely on equipment too much. They also go from tip to tip to tip to tip to tip, right? A tip in the golf magazine, a tip on the golf channel, a tip here, a tip there. And it's like, wait a minute. Find a few things that really make sense to you and that are a good analysis of what you're doing and what you need. Find out where you need to be stronger, more balanced. Find out what your mental game is saying. Find out a few of these things, and here's some basic practices that you can do, and just do them. Stick with them. Look at the pros. They practice over and over and over a few things, and then they actually make progress with those things. And what I find is a lot of people, as you say, they go and drop some money on another piece of equipment that's not going to help them that much because they're not any different. And they also, maybe they'll go to a lesson or they'll try something, and they'll hit a few balls or it'll work for a day or two, and then they go, this doesn't work. But they didn't actually do what we call in martial arts training, like regular daily practice that starts to really develop the proper movements, the proper fitness, the mental game and self-talk that where you can really internalize them. People talk a lot about muscle memory, and it's true. You need good muscle memory. You get it from practicing over and over really correct good stuff that works. You don't get it. And most people, what are they remembering? I mean, it's a little scary what most people are remembering.
Well, and that raises a really good
more too.
Right, and that raises a very valid point. I've said this many, many times on the program. We have a segment that I haven't done tonight, but that I've been doing for a while this year. I call it Coach's Corner. and I have invited a bunch of teacher professionals from literally all over the country in that to come on, and we have a panel discussion. We have some email questions come in, and we try to help people with their games. And obviously, you know, we can't, you know, do everything in short term. But one of the things that we try to emphasize is the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a DVD or a video or a you know, one-on-one instructor, if you're not going to take the information that you've been given and go out and practice it and work on it, it's not going to help. And you raised made a very interesting comment. What a lot of people will do is they'll take a lesson or they'll see something, a tip, and they'll go out and they'll try it out a few times at the range, and either they'll have some success with it momentarily, and they're like, okay, yeah, this is it. And then they'll take it out in the course, it might work for a few holes, and then suddenly it's like, wow, this is crap, or this isn't going to work. And they're looking for the next one. But what they don't realize is, as you pointed out, you need to go out and you need to work on that. That's what the pros do. The pros, you know, Tiger Woods didn't make a swing change, do it once or twice, and say, aha, okay, now I'm going to, you know, work with this for the rest of my life. He went out and he practiced and he worked at it. And the mentality, unfortunately, in society today is they don't want to do that. They want a quick fix. They want an app for it, or they want a video for it, and they expect instant gratification. And if they don't get it, then they're on to the next one. And that's why it's so difficult in this industry to keep people's attention, because they're looking for the next, you know, thing, the news clubs or what, you know what I mean? And that's something the industry needs to start focusing on. Sorry,
yeah, well, and this is bringing in some of that ancient wisdom of the masters and how you actually really, you know, train and get better and practice things. I've often joked that I would probably be much better off financially if I made some pill bottles and they said, one said accuracy and one said confidence and one said consistency and one said power and distance. And, you know, if I sold those, and people would take them, and they'd probably even have a placebo effect, right? You take one, and you think, oh, I can hit it farther, and all of a sudden you would. But so that's kind of – it's a joke, you know, but it's in that
thing.
One of the things that I've done in my Kei golf training is that I've developed some, number one, these fitness exercises that actually relate directly to your golf swing, your rotational ability, your stability, your balance, your extensions down the target line, your patterning of your golf swing so that you're moving, as in all sports, from the feet up through the hips up to the, and then letting the upper body be connected and move in a relaxed way so that you actually have relaxed club head speed and things like that rather than this tense upper body killing it sort of thing. But the exercises, they all work with your golf club. I always say that all we really have on the golf course is our body, our mind, and our golf club. It's not legal to have any devices, any technology. You can't call up your pro, right? You really need to, and this is another reason we have to develop our own self-mastery. But also, your golf club's legal. You got it out there. So if you can use your golf club to, kind of in an NLP, a neuro-linguistic programming fashion, to click you into this place where you're centered, where you're relaxed, where you're focused, and you've practiced in a way that not only works on your actual golf swing and the movements and the sequencing of movements that we need and positions and transitions and patterns that so that you're practicing a consistent, you know, more or less correct pattern, and I pattern it after the tour pros that anybody can do, but so you develop that pattern, that's what the muscle memory you're developing. And you can use it on the golf course when you kind of got to get your timing and your rhythm back, find your swing planes, and not just by going, oh, what am I doing wrong? Where should this be? Where should that be? No, let's just get centered and grounded, follow these patterns, boom, you're back right away. And the beauty of the exercises is that you can do them indoors or outdoors. You can do them rain or shine. You don't necessarily have to have golf balls in front of you, because I know that most people, maybe people listening right now, are going, oh, I can't practice the way the pros do. You know, who has the time, the money to get to the driving range, to get enough balls, to get on the golf course? Most of us don't. But we can all, number one, do fitness even at home or in your office or in the, you know, some grass in the park or, you know, on your lawn, whatever, much less at the golf course. But if you can do some daily fitness practices and swing patterning practices that you can do, and you're developing that self-awareness and developing the proper motions and building those neuromuscular pathways by that repetition, well, you can practice winter or summer, you know, morning, noon, or night, rain or shine. And that's what really matters. Then when you actually go to the range and go to the golf course and you've got golf balls in front of you, wow. The other thing is, I don't know if people think about doing things like getting wiffle golf balls and that aren't going to break any windows, you know, they aren't going to hurt anything.
Yep.
And I like to get hula hoops and put them out there on the grass and make them like a little tiny green, a target, right? So here you are, you've been practicing your swing patterns, your backswing, downswing, impact follow through and all that. And then you can hit wiffle balls. Doesn't cost you any more money. You got targets. You got your hula hoops out there. And you can practice your swing motion. Well, boy, by the time you get to the driving range and the golf course, you're going to be better. So what I'm saying is there are a lot of ways that people really can build daily or every other daily practice in that doesn't have to take a ton of time or cost a lot of money. I'm also saying there's no excuses, you know, and that this is – This is the tried and true way to actually improve.
Right, and let me just add to that, as of course my listeners know, and I'm not sure if you're aware or not, I'm obviously originally from Canada, and we have a very limited golf season, of course, so you either had a choice, you either came down south or you did stuff indoors, and that's exactly what I used to do. One of the things that I did long before, you know, not necessarily, I won't say the invention of the video camera, but before everybody had their little iPhones and so forth, you know, video wasn't a big thing. So what I used to do in my basement, I had high ceilings, so it was perfect to do this, is I went to my local, you know, store and purchased a long full-length mirror that I could place on the floor. And, of course, I had it, you know, it was framed and that. It was cheap. It wasn't expensive. So I actually leaned it up against the wall. And what I used to do is both a face-on and a down-the-line view is I would practice my golf swing, and I would look and check the position because I didn't, you know, that time people, you know, they weren't shooting videos. They weren't taking video of your swing so you could see it. And I didn't trust my buddies that well to give me good advice because they were always trying to beat me, so I figured they'd give me some rotten advice anyways. But, you know, what I would do is I would use that, and I would, as you said, I would get the wiffle ball and things like that, and I'd go out up at the park and things like that. I would even do them outside. Because they didn't like, you know, short of going to a golf course, we used to have in behind our local public school, we had a lot of soccer fields. So I'd go up there and I would just practice my swings and just to get the feel and the flow of the golf swing and, you know, without breaking any windows at the school. So I would do things like that.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of
things,
and of course, fitness. So you're 100% right. You know, most people today, unfortunately, patience is something that seems to be lacking. And, you know, everybody wants everything now. They want it instant, as I said earlier, you know, instant gratification. And they're willing to – and one of the things I did, just going back to the PGA show real quick, when I went down this year, what I did, which was kind of interesting, is I decided to be a little devil's advocate, and I put my hand over my badge so that people didn't know what I did or where I was from. And as I'm walking by the booths, of course, people are peering over to see who I am or, you know, where I work and that sort of thing. And I didn't want them to know for a very specific reason, is I didn't want them to think that I was a buyer and I didn't want them to think I was media or what have you. I just wanted to see what their approach was. And it was amazing the number of people that approached me that were, you know, promising everything from the wind if I bought this or if I did that and you know, bought it. And I'm not trying to knock anything because a lot of the stuff was certainly good, but there's a lot of things, to be honest, you know, as we said earlier, that it's really a marriage of a multiple of things that you need to do in order to become a better golfer and so forth. And, you know, there is no one quick fix. And I, you know, the pros know that, and that's why they go out and they practice. And I always say that, you know, you have to practice with a purpose. You have to have some sort of a purpose to be out there, not just hitting ball after ball and expecting to improve. You have to go out there and have a game plan. And there's a lot of great teachers and great instructors out there that will help you put that together, but you have to ask them. And you have to talk to them and engage with them. And, you know, again, I'm not knocking to go buy the equipment, and there are certainly products out there that can assist, but that's the way you have to look at it, is there are things that are going to assist in your journey, but they're not going to, you know, necessarily cure all of the problems. So you have to be a smart consumer, a savvy consumer, if you will, when you're out there looking at these things. But, Jamie, let me ask you something. I thought I would since you're, you know, here to sort of help some of the listeners out, you obviously, as I mentioned earlier, you travel quite extensively throughout the world, and you've been to a lot of different areas. which certainly offer you many possibilities to learn from others. What, if anything, have you learned in your travels that have helped you become a better teacher?
That's a good question. Well, I'll tell you, I have learned something that has been really pretty interesting for me and very affirming, quite honestly, and that is that I find there's a tremendous hunger out there amongst people, I mean, in different countries and different states and different levels of ability, different all strata of society. I find that there is a hunger for something else, for something more.
Yeah.
And, you know, I come along and sometimes people go, oh, who's that, you know, who's that woman with a sword? What she got a sword for? You know, martial arts, what's that doing here? And it's sort of, it's kind of like, it's kind of like at first blush, and being from California, people go, oh, this is maybe a little out there or something like that. And what happens is, for me, usually within a few minutes of kind of giving a little presentation or starting a training or something like that, people just sort of light up because it turns out it's pretty common sense, and it just makes a lot of sense. And people aren't talking to them about it. No one's really necessarily showing them about their footwork, their feet, how the lower body works, the way it ought to work in golf, the way it does in other sports, or the fact that this is kind of a holistic thing because we are. And holistic doesn't have to be new agey, and it doesn't have to be woo-woo. This is very practical. It's going to get you better results. And, I mean, I've had my parents' friends are older now, and maybe the snowbirds and people like that, not people who you think would be very responsive to this stuff. I've had people say to me, oh, man, now I really wish I was 20 again. I wish I'd have known this for my whole life. I'd start over. That would be really great.
Right.
And so what's really been kind of nice is just to kind of feel and see that people are really interested in looking for something that's a little bit more or beyond the usual about swing mechanics or equipment. Not that those things aren't important, but they come into an integrated picture. And they also come into, oh, my gosh, golf fitness, this is also about just being present in my body and knowing what I'm thinking and starting to have some input and control over myself because I'm the golfer. I'm the one making this golf ball go. It's like, oh, this starts to open up things that seem obvious, but somehow they're being missed. So I have learned that the human body and the human spirit and human mind pretty much function in a universal ways. It really doesn't kind of matter where we are. I've seen it be true everywhere I go. And I've also seen that people really respond. This isn't some, you know, far out new agey thing by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
If anything, it's very commonsensical. Everyone can understand it. Everybody can utilize it. And everybody's interested in results. And, oh, when they start getting some better results, they feel better. They have more energy. They don't run out of gas on the 13th hole. Their back doesn't hurt them anymore. They're hitting the ball farther. They're more consistent. They're feeling more confident because they are more consistent, because they know what they're doing. They know how they're starting their backswing. They know how they're starting their downswing. They're doing something effective and repeatable every time. It's like, wow, I feel like a golfer. I look like a golfer. It's a great thing. So that's kind of what I found, and it's been very, very heartening to me to have that experience kind of everywhere I go.
Well, and that's, you know, that's really what I'm talking about as well. I mean, you know, I think that the game and sport itself is certainly evolving and certainly could be moving along a little faster, but you know, at least it is moving in the right direction. But there is so much more to, the game than just the mechanic part of the swing and so forth, like you said. And I think you're right. You're 100% right. People are searching for something more, not just in golf, but in everything in their life. And I think golf really mimics life in so many ways, and it's been said 1,000 times. And I think that once people have a better understanding about themselves and how they actually work, then they can apply it to different areas of their life. And this is really, in a sense, I guess, what you're bringing.
Yeah. Well, it carries over so naturally, and it doesn't take a genius to see connections and to feel the difference. You put your golf club down, it's like, wow, I'm more focused, I'm more centered, I'm more relaxed, I feel stronger, I feel more balanced. Like, wow, this makes a difference in my life. I want to give you one of my, I always joke, but one of my Stanford Phi Beta Kappa theories of better golfing. You ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, here's how it goes. In golf, we need to make what we call centered contact on the golf ball. This is, I think, pretty common knowledge, and we certainly emphasize it in all of our teacher instructor training in the LPGA, the PGA. And that centered contact is the sweet spot, right, between these two vibrational nodes on the golf club, and all the energy ends up going into the golf ball. Sorry, I got a little noise in the background. I apologize. But it will pass. Okay, so we need to make centered contact. Now, what happens? Most golfers make centered contact on a random basis. You know,
sure.
You go to the driving range and it's like, oh, there's a good one, two good ones in a row, oh, no, oh, there's one, right? So it's kind of a random basis.
Right.
They're the ones on the golf course that keep you coming back for more. You hit this fabulous shot, but you don't even know how it happened and when it's going to happen again, right? So centered contact on a random basis. Here's my theory. If I'm centered and I make centered sequential swing motion, and I'm not swaying off the ball in the backswing, and I'm not lifting or moving forward on the ball on the forward swing, and I have the stability, the strength, the flexibility to be centered through impact and extend down the target line on the backswing to kind of coil in a contained way so I can coil up that energy and power, then deliver it properly. Well, so if I'm centered, I make this centered movement, and I'm centered through impact, what am I going to come out with? Centered contact, right?
Sure.
Just make centered
right.
golf shot. So the theory is centered plus centered equals centered. And if our percentage of centered shots goes up, we're automatically going to have ball in play more often. We're going to start having fewer penalty strokes, fewer balls in the woods, in the water, or out of bounds. When we miss centered contact on the golf club, it won't be so far off the toe or the heel or whatever. So the shot itself will maybe be in the rough. It won't be in the lake. You know what I'm saying? So
right, exactly.
The idea is if we can keep the ball in play more, make more centered contact, we start to have more control over the golf ball, and that all originates with us being able to be more centered and grounded and move in a connected, sequential way. Wow, we're going to have much higher percentage than random centered golf shots. So this is kind of like, oh, wow, never really thought of it that way. And then what would it look like to build your golf swing from that place? And it takes body-mind awareness, your mind being aware of what your body parts are doing. It takes that kind of strength and flexibility. It takes connection to your lower body and the connected upper body and all these kinds of things. But that's the stuff you start working on, and you go, wow, this sort of starts to work. And if I can hit centered shots 30% of the time, 40% of the time, 50, 60, 70% of the time, wow, I can only improve my scores. I can only improve my enjoyment. I can feel like I'm having input into my good shots and not just going, wow, what did I do? I don't know how to do it again.
Yeah.
Now you start to become more of a proficient golfer.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, and this is the thing, is most people don't understand, truthfully, what really a good golf shot is. And it's very difficult to, you know, and instructors of years, but, you know, try to explain. It's something that you obviously have to feel and yourself. And when you do hit a well-struck shot, most people couldn't tell you how they did it. And, you know, even some of the pros certainly at this point now have a better understanding. But, you know, the average amateur player, as you said, when they're out at the driving range, they might hit one or two good shots in a row, and then the next two or three are you know, slicing here or hooking there, and then they might hit another good one. But they can't begin to tell you how they make it happen. And, you know, this is where I think, you know, as instructors that we really need to, you know, instead of trying to get into all the theories, I have, you know, a theory of my own, really, when it comes to a lot of the technology that's out there. I think it's great. It's great to have all, you know, an extra set of eyes by way of video and so forth and all of these different machines.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as instructors, we also have to be as you said, a more holistic approach, because what happens in the event if the batteries die or the power goes out, we lose all of that technology. So we have to understand ourselves, you know, really what's going on. And I think once that earlier, all of these different devices and all of this equipment is great as a tool or as an assisting, but if we're relying solely on these other elements in order to become better players without really understanding, sort of the core principles, then what ultimately ends up happening is we can't really explain to ourselves or understand what it is that needs to happen. So when you do have sporadic shots or things like that, you can't begin to understand what it is you're doing wrong. So you're sort of all, and that's why so many people are confused and frustrated, end up dropping the game. They just don't get it. And it's very difficult through technology even to try and explain it. I mean, I walked around the PGA Show and there were some interesting gadgets, but even I was scratching my head, and I've been playing the game since I was 7 because I was just thinking, like, how was that? And it's not that they don't work. And again, I'm not trying to put anything down. I'm all for technology. But I think we, as individuals, need to understand ourselves better. And what you're saying is exactly right. And I can see, why, you're in the demand that you are. Jamie, unfortunately. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to sort of bold and italicize something you said, which is about understanding core principles. And I think that's something that somehow we miss. It's almost like you don't see the forest for the trees or something. And actually, I start out with, that's what I do in my trainings or even my DVD series. It starts out with what I call the universal principles for success or the essentials for excellence. I call them the mechanics for the magic. It doesn't matter what you call them. But the idea is, and it comes down from martial arts or yogic masters or whatever, is that we live in an energetic universe. When they call it something, ki, prana, doesn't matter. But there's this energy, and here's how it works. There's certain sort of laws of nature by which it works. If you build a building, you build a basement, a first floor. There's no second floor without the first floor. There's no upper body without the lower body, right? You bake a cake and put frosting. There's no frosting just hanging over the plate. You've got to have the cake first. So this is when we talk about core and legs and base. It's just the way things work. And so when you start to look at the universal principles, in fact, a best way to practice is actually Tiger Woods started golfing. He learned from green to tee, not from tee to green.
Yep.
A lot of people want to learn to hit their driver and then maybe kind of get down to the smaller clubs. No, you build up from small to large, micro to macrocosm. That's the way a human being or any baby develops into an adult, the driver being the adult. Club. And so if you start to practice and to learn and develop following some certain core principles, you start to then have so much more success. Not only that, I think that one of the things I discovered in my travels, everybody's built more or less the same way. And so when we start to follow those universal principles, we start to feel comfortable in our body. The golf swing itself doesn't feel like this foreign thing that it's different from every other athletic motion. It isn't. It's a throw-the-ball sport. We're using our body similarly. We ought to be. And then we start to feel more comfortable, and we start to have more relaxed effectiveness, and things start to go better. So what you said about core principles, I think, is really, really important. And then we fill in the details from there. But the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and too often in golf it's kind of like parts, 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 like they're all going to add up to a swing. And it's so this is part of following the wisdom of the ancient or the Eastern masters or whatever, and really studying kind of natural law, how it works through our bodies and the tools, the instruments we pick up. And then what we focus on, what kind of goals we have with our mind, whether it's putting a golf ball in the hole or a serve in tennis into the proper side of the court, it really doesn't matter what it is.
Right, exactly. Jamie, we're unfortunately running out of time here. We're winding down the last little bit here of the program. I wanted to give you an opportunity just to let those that are tuning into the program, if they want to find out more about the Ki Way or Ki Golf, where can they start?
I would say go to my website, which is you can either get their same website, but it'll get you there from kiigolf.com, K-I-A-I, golf, G-O-L-F.com, or thekiiway.com, T-H-E-K-I-A-I-W-A-Y.com. And our phone number is 760-492-4653, 760-492-GOLF. Those are direct ways. They can write to me, Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, at kiigolf.com. I'll get the emails. And you know, they can look into my DVD series is a really nice way to get into things. Or just contact me. I'm always happy to help and love meeting people, love finding out where people are at and seeing what we can do to help them move to their next level.
Fantastic. Well, Jamie, I want to thank you for joining me this evening, and I know that your work has certainly made a difference not only in your life but for those that you've worked with, and I appreciate you sharing your story with my listeners. And I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. It's I always look at it. One of the things I enjoy about doing this program is I always manage to learn something new, and I feel that we're always as human beings we're always learning or should be always learning, and should never switch off and assume that we know everything. I always try to incorporate things that I've learned by doing the program or people that I meet with, especially in the industry. As I said, I thoroughly enjoyed, listening to what you had to say, and I'm certainly going to be looking more into the Kii Way and Kii Golf and sharing that with not only my listeners but also some of those that I work with. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing that. And I certainly want to wish you much continued success. And just on a final note, Jim, before I let you go, as I mentioned to you earlier in the program, I do a segment called Coach's Corner. And I would like to invite you to come back on and participate. I'm starting a new series called Plan for Success as part of the Coach's Corner segment. And one of the things that we're going to be doing, I talked about it earlier in the show, I don't know if you had a chance to listen in earlier on, but basically what it's going to be covering is a multitude of areas, but there's really points, fitness, nutrition, equipment, instruction, practice, and, of course, the mental side of things. And I would love to have you come back on and participate, maybe for a couple of those segments. It'll be roughly about an hour long, and we'll have some others from the industry as well that will be on. And I want to get sort of break down each of those categories, and then we're going to sum it up in a final show and talk about some of the things. But I think you'd certainly be a great asset to have come on board. And if your time permits, I would certainly love to extend an invitation to you. And I'll get in touch with you later and let you know the dates and things like that. But I would love to have you participate if you're willing.
Well, thank you so much. I would very much enjoy being part of that. I appreciate the invitation. And I think that will be a lot of fun and hopefully really sounds like a wonderful kind of program service that you'll be providing for your listeners with some great coaches and mixing it up. So thank you for the invitation. And also thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. Feels like we're kind of beaming really nicely, and it's really fun to talk about this kind of stuff.
Well, and this is something that, as I've said to my other guests, one of the things that I want to do with this program and when I started this a little while back, I don't want to be, another stats guy. The Golf Channel and ESPN Golf and many of the others out there do a fantastic job of letting everybody know who's doing what on the tours and stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's great. But I didn't want to bring another program to the air, if you will, that's just going to be repetitive. I want to do something different. So I want to bring, and I hate to use this analogy, especially in this political climate, but I wanted to bring the other 99% of people in the golf industry on the airways, if you will, and talk about something other than just on the tour. I mean, we'll certainly reference the tours and for purpose of explanation, but I don't want to just talk about what so-and-so is doing and who's leading on the leaderboard. There's a lot of other great people out there that are doing a fantastic job, so I want to bring new and exciting things that are happening in the golf industry that maybe the average person out there isn't aware of because it's not being shown on necessarily all the other media formats. And I understand why. I mean, they're going where they feel their market is, and that's their market. But I want to create a new market, and I've enjoyed a fair amount of success as a result of it. I think people get what it is I'm trying to do here with Golf Talk Live. So I appreciate you sharing in that. And as I said, you have an open invitation to come back anytime if you have some new things that you want to share or expanding on. And also, I would love to have you become part of the Coach's Corner and periodically come on that when your schedule permits.
Well, excellent. We'll do it. And thank you for seeing a need and really being so active and fulfilling it. I think you're doing a tremendous job and a tremendous service, really, for, as you say, the vast majority of people and golfers out there. So thank you very much, and I'm very happy to be part of that effort.
Well, I appreciate it, Jamie, and thank you. And as you said earlier, there's a lot of frustration out there, and everybody is doing their part, and I think that the more that we can do to work together as a team, if you will, even though we're all doing our own individual things in the golf business, but I think if we collectively work together, and that's the other reason I do this program, is to really bring a lot of the talent that's out there together and share ideas and some of the feedback that I've gotten back with the program from people within the business is that, as I just alluded to a second ago, is they're learning something. I get people saying this on the show all the time, some of the other coaches and teachers, I'm learning something from listening to so-and-so. And, so this is a way of really bringing people together, sharing an idea, and the listeners, of course, average golfer out there, gets to benefit from some of the expertise that's coming on the program. So I'm glad to share it, and I enjoy doing it, and I love having great guests. I had a great time tonight. I appreciate you coming on. I had a lot of fun.
I hate to tell you, it's kind of like you're doing a Kii Way thing. What's Kii? It's just like that bringing together and finding how we can harmonize and creating the sort of exponential results from that coming together and that joining together. So, I mean, that's really all Kii is. It's just a couple of Japanese words, but it's the principle, again, that you're talking about, that core principle, and that's where we all just benefit so much more in that coming together. So thanks for doing that.
Well, I appreciate it. And Jamie, you enjoy your stay in Milwaukee and have a safe trip back home. And how long are you in Milwaukee for?
Actually, I leave tomorrow. I'm headed to Detroit. I'm teaching a couple Aikido seminars in Detroit, and I'm going to be at the Ohio Women's Open in Defiance, Ohio, which is a wonderful annual golf tournament. And I'll be there hosted by Eagle Rock Golf Club and LBJ colleague Martha Malott. So I'll be down there. I won it once, and we'll see how I do this year, but it's always fun just to have the opportunities to play.
That's right. Well, good luck in the tournament, and again, much continued success with the Kii Way and Kii Golf, and please, as I said, feel free to reach out anytime if you want to come back on the program to update us with some new and exciting things that you're doing, and I'll be in touch with you soon as well, Jamie, about also the other show, but also about coming on and participating in my Coach's Corner segments here on Golf Talk Live.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ted, and thanks to all your listeners. Appreciate everything.
All right. Not a problem. You have a great evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. For those of you that are tuning in, unfortunately, we're just winding down the broadcast here. That was my very special guest, LPGA teacher professional and golf sensei, Jamie Leno-Zimron. And she's, as she just mentioned, up in Milwaukee right now, getting ready to head over to Detroit. But she's originally from California. Is where she's residing now up in the San Francisco Bay Area. What a great individual to have on the program. Certainly was very excited to have her on here. And if you want to learn more information, as she indicated, you can visit her website at kiigolf.com or thekiiway.com, and it's spelled the following, www.kiaigolf.com or www.thekiiway.com. You can visit either of those websites and learn more about the Kii Way and Kii Golf that we were talking about tonight. And I want to thank, of course, all of my listeners for tuning in each and every week here to Golf Talk Live from all over the world. Appreciate you faithfully tuning in, and certainly have a pleasure and enjoyment of having a number of highly talented coaches and teaching professionals and authors and photographers, as we had earlier with Russell Kirk from Atlanta. Thank you, Russell, as well for stopping by. And it's through their participation and guest appearances that have really helped to make Golf Talk Live a first-class show. So thank you, and I hope you'll continue to tune in each week. And I want to give a special thanks, of course, to some of the sponsors and supporters of the show, Mr. Jonathan Laird from South Coast Golf Guide. Jonathan, thank you for all your continued support. And if you want to get a copy of that guide, you can go to southcoastgolfguide.com. And don't forget, while you're on Facebook tonight, if you're doing some of the Facebook thing, make sure that you type in South Coast Golf Guide and throw a few likes Jonathan's way as well in support of what a great publication here in the southeastern part of the United States. A lot of great courses in there. Get yourself a copy, and you can find out how by visiting the website. Meredith Kirk, who is Mrs. South Carolina for 2014, she's going to be entering in the next few weeks, I believe, Mrs. USA pageant. And she's also runs Meredith Kirk Golf, and also does a lot of other great junior programs as well in golf. And she's pursuing some other dreams that and desires that she's passionate about, and in pursuit of helping those play some great golf. So thank you, Meredith, for all of your continued support. And also thank you to Nikki and Tiffany Litherland from my friends from Down Under in Australia. Thank you for continuing to help spread the word and all of your support of the program. And, of course, Mr. Bernie Pinder from Ontic Golf. You can check his website out at Ontic Golf, and that's ONTICgolf.com. Great line of custom design and built putters by Mr. Bernie Pinder, one of which I own, of course. And last but not least, my good friend from over in Ireland, Mr. Peter Doyle, Doyle Golf Solutions. He is not only a great instructor, but he's also a great club maker and fitter as well. And certainly he's all over Facebook and all over the Internet as well. So you can check him out. Thank you, Peter, for all your continued support. Again, thank you to my guests, photographer Russell Kirk, for coming by, and also for Jamie for stopping by here on Golf Talk Live. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I will see you right here next Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time right here on Golf Talk Live. God bless, and everybody have a great weekend. Take care.